Good afternoon. Before I present my paper, I would like to thank UP Open University for organizing this lecture series and for allowing the Asian Center to co-organize this activity as part of our CN Week celebration, despite short notice. Special thanks to Chancellor Alfonso, of course, to VC Lumanta, VC Saludades, and even Dean Booth and the staff for this opportunity to present to you in front of you this afternoon. Now, my presentation is entitled ASEAN. I'm tempted to use the word ASEAN, but I think to be faithful with how it is pronounced by our colleagues in Southeast Asia, so I should say ASEAN. ASEAN in Southeast Asia, a cultural region. Why I'm putting ASEAN in Southeast Asia? Because we have to clarify that in a region, the concept of region is very important, and the region of Southeast Asia is composed of 11 rather than 10. So the ASEAN countries only composed of, there are only 10 countries, and we have to include Timor-Leste for that. So just to give you an overview, so an outline, right, rather, is that I'm going to discuss now. The flow of my discussion will be Southeast Asia, an overview. So I'll give you a background why we need to study Southeast Asia right now. And then we'll try to revisit the terminology, cultural region or cultural area for that matter, and the region from a cultural perspective. And then we look at in terms of the neglect of cultural regions as part of colonial legacies, or I may say colonial blunder, in the context of studying Southeast Asia. And of course, I'd like to see later on present some of the prospects, how to make use of cultural region as a concept, and to revisit maybe the alternative paradigm in discussing ASEAN in Southeast Asia. And of course, I'll try to provide a conclusion later on before your open forum. So, Southeast Asia, as I mentioned, consists of 10 countries of ASEAN and Timor-Leste that expanded its territory from eastern India to China, and is divided into mainland and island zones. So the mainland, some authors would use still Burma or Barma for that matter. I use the word Myanmar because it's the present name. Thailand or Siam at the time. Laos or Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, which is actually, in fact, these are the extension of the ancient continent. Whereas island or maritime Southeast Asia includes Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Philippines, Brunei, and of course, the new nation of Timor-Leste. All of Southeast Asia lies between the tropics, and so there is similarities in climate as well as plant and animal life throughout the region. It is observed that temperatures are generally warm, although cooler in highland areas, just like here in the Philippines, Baguio, and of course, even in the northern part of Vietnam, where they have the subtropics. So, in the description of Southeast Asia, I'd like to quote at length the description made by noted Southeast Asianist, Dr. Barbara Watson-Andaya, about Southeast Asia. And she said that all of Southeast Asia lies between the tropics, and so there are similarities in climate as well as plant and animal life throughout the region. And many of the jungle, sea and jungle products are unique to the region and were therefore much desired by international traders in early times. For example, several small islands in eastern Indonesia were once the world's only source of cloves, nutmeg, and maize, so like Moluccas and Malacca. The entire region is also affected by the monsoon winds. So aside from geography, you have the climate and the wind direction. So these monsoon winds, which blow regularly from the northwest and then reverse blow to blow from the southeast. So we have the concept of habagat and amihan. These wind systems bring fairly predictable rainy seasons. And before steamships were invented, these wind systems also enable traders from outside the region to arrive and leave at regular intervals. So these are these migrants and sailors were the first OFWs, the sea-based. Because of this reliable wind pattern, Southeast Asia became a meeting place for trade between India and China, the two great markets of early Asia. And that will perhaps explain in the later part why our culture is so diverse because of these influences. So the presence later on of Hinduism and Buddhism, Islam on the later part because of the Arab traders definitely make the culture of Southeast Asia very interesting, diverse, and very rich. So there are also differences in terms of the physical environment of mainland and Southeast Asia. But before I proceed to that, let me just show you at least an overview of the present, even in terms of the population and the density and the area of each country. And if you notice then, the Philippines is one of the highest in terms of the density. No, but of course, the highest is Singapore, and that is understandable because Singapore is too small, and yet they have about 4 million people. 5 million. And of course, followed by Vietnam. No, the third will be Vietnam. So at least you have that idea of how big is the population of Southeast Asia, more or less about 6 million population. 6 billion. Million people or inhabitants all in all. Now, in terms of the cultural group, you notice then that, you know, although this cultural group, you'll see it's not Indonesian because I think maybe it's Malay. Yeah. But if a big chunk of that, the blue-colored figures, of course, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Indonesia, and parts of Irian Jaya, of Papua New Guinea, considered to be part of under the category Indonesian. But to correct that, I think we should put that under Malay or Austronesian. Okay, if it is considered under language. Okay. So aside from this, before I proceed to the cultural region, I'd like to point out that there are some differences in the physical environment of mainland and island Southeast Asia. For the mainland geography, or the geography of mainland Southeast Asia, there are three features. The first is that the geography of mainland Southeast Asia is the long rivers that begin in the highlands separating Southeast Asia from China and Northwest India. And take note that these rivers take note that water is not a barrier, but is actually the facilitator of change and exchange. And therefore, most of the early civilizations and centers that existed or that emerged in Southeast Asia are located near bodies of water. And the second feature is the extensive lowland plains separated by forested hills and mountain ranges. These fertile plains are highly suited to rice-growing ethnic groups such as Thais, the Burmese, and the Vietnamese, who developed settled cultures that eventually provided the basis for modern states. The highlands were occupied by tribal groups who displayed their sense of identity through distinctive style in clothing, jewelry, and hairstyles. The third feature of the mainland Southeast Asia in terms of its geography is the long coastline. Despite a strong agrarian base, the communities developed in this region were also part of the maritime trading network that linked Southeast Asia to India and China. And this is best exemplified by the presence of various thalassocratic polities. Thalassocracy means it's a maritime polity or kingdom. Thalassa or thalas for that means sea, and Socratic or Kratic for that is Kratin for rule. So those who ruled the sea, and therefore we have so many, even the Chams and other early kingdoms in Southeast Asia. As for the maritime Southeast Asia, one main feature is the size, because the islands of maritime Southeast Asia can range from a very large for instance, Borneo, Sumatra, Java, and even Luzon in the Philippines, to tiny pinpoints on the map, Indonesia is said to comprise about 17,000 islands. Because the interior of these islands were jungle-clad and frequently dissected by highlands, land travel was never easy. Southeast Asians found it easier to move out or to move by boat between different seas. Kaya nga sinabi ko that the sea is not the barrier but facilitator of change and exchanges. And it is often said that the land divides and the sea unites. The oceans that connected coasts and neighboring islands created smaller zones where people shared similar languages and were exposed to same religious and cultural influences. And please, I may reiterate this, the modern borders created by colonial powers, which is actually my point later on, between Malaysia, for example, and Indonesia, do not reflect logical cultural divisions. Okay, let me repeat that. The modern borders created by colonial powers, example, between Malaysia and Indonesia, do not reflect logical cultural divisions. And I'm going to point out that later on. The second feature of maritime Southeast Asia is the seas themselves, no? The sea. Apart from a few deep underwater trenches, the oceans are shallow, which means that they are rather warm and not very salty. This is an ideal environment for fish, coral, seaweeds, and other products. Though the seas in some areas are rough, the region as a whole, except for the Philippines, is generally free of hurricanes and typhoons because the Philippines is exporting typhoon, even to China and Japan. However, there are many active volcanoes and island world, which is actually very vulnerable to earthquake activity. So here, now I'm, after discussing about an overview or giving you an overview of Southeast Asia, I'd like to point out what is the meaning of culture of a region. Because if we look at it from international relations, from the perspective of international relations, they will define region as simply a territory or an area composed of various polities or nation states. But scholars would define the region simply as a socially constructed but politically contested. But here, from the context of from the perspective of culture, region is considered to be as a kind of cultural space, which is actually a specific area occupied by people sharing recognizable and distinctive cultural characteristics as well as cultural heritage. Consequently, the cultural region consists of a large cultural space which can represent an entire culture system and reflect cultural traits, beliefs, values, and complexes. So this is from the cultural or anthropological perspective. One scholar explained the concept of relation of culture and, of course, the region. So she said, cultures have a geographical dwelling or a space. And it's true naman, di ba? It is impossible for them, even for our Samabadjaw people, to continue the tradition without a space, even if they're staying more or less above water, no? Even if they're actually in the base in water. So, furthermore, they are united to a geographical environment and respond to it. The human environment and the natural environment can never be separated. Human beings leave their ontological markers on their environment. The reciprocal relation creates geographical milieu and cultural milieu. That means that culture and region are inseparable as concepts and as entity. So what is cultural region or cultural regions? First is that this concept is not new in the discourse of social sciences and humanities. According to N. Brown, although distinctions between regions based on culture are as old as mankind, the roots of culture area concept can be traced to Europe, where the work of a German geographer, Ratzel, inspired the development of a Kulturkreis, or cultural circles. It was not in Europe, however, but in the United States that the concept of cultural area or cultural region gained real social scientific cohesion. That's in 1917, Whistler, or Clark Whistler, an anthropologist with the American Museum of Natural History, used the cultural region concept to integrate what was known in that context of Native American communities. Whistler gathered together ethnographic data from a variety of sources and used this data to group Native American tribes based on similarities and differences in their subsistence systems, modes of transport, textile, artwork, and religious practice. As a result of this effort, he discerned a distinct geographic pattern, with groups living in proximity or in similar natural environments sharing many cultural traits. So Whistler eventually defined 9 distinct Native American culture areas, grouping tribes that shared significant traits. And in the mid-20th century, geographer Carl Sauer reinvigorated the culture area concept within the field of geography by synthesizing the ideas of the European Kulturkreis school with anthropological approaches to culture area, Kulturkreis. And he argued that the diffusion of ideas from a few cultural centers had been the driving force in human history. His work inspired further research on the origin and spread of cultures within human geography. And here, in our definition, I think I selected this definition as a basis of my discussion later on, because it is very clear here that the cultural regions may be defined by a set of cultural criteria, such as traditional farm and villages types or village types, traditions of land use, viticulture, and farming, traditions of nutrition, everyday practices and attitudes, traditions of celebrating holidays and festivities, a common historical consciousness, language or dialects for that matter, at the same time religion and the manifestation or material manifestations of religion, particularly churches, chapels, crosses, and places of pilgrimage, and among others. But I think it is qualified here, Dr. Jordan, qualified that there may be several other criteria. And many of them are rather symbolic, but they shape the identity of people, race, and living in this region and contribute to a common consciousness. Even they even said that, you know, democracy is, or human right for that matter, is a commonality. So, based on this criteria, let's start with traditional farm and village types. I think we can relate, based on this, that our climate and physical geography or environment mold the kind of life in Southeast Asia. And this will include common architectural design of the kind of life, no? Commonly of the kind of architecture and the kind of settlement that we develop in Southeast Asia. These are just only a few of the examples of the architectural design that we can find in Southeast Asia, whether it is in the water or it's in the land. If you go to the northern part of the Philippines, no, even the Ifugao, our people use the stilt architectural design. No? So stilts are common architectural element in tropical architecture, especially in Southeast Asia, particularly in rural areas. So in Indonesia, for instance, the construction of the house symbolizes the division of the microcosm into 3 regions, the upper world, the seat of deities and ancestors, the middle world, the realm of human and lower world, the realm of demon and the malevolent spirit. The typical way of buildings in Southeast Asia is to build on stilts, an architectural form usually combined with a saddle roof. And in fact, I can also include in my example the Romulo Hall, the building, old building of the Asian Center in UP Diliman. It's actually patterned after the stilt house. And stilts can be found in various provinces, even in Indonesia and Malaysia, the Malay houses. And if you go to Brunei, you can still see that in a modern Brunei state. The construction is sometimes called or locally known as the Rumah Panggung or the stage house, built on stilts. The primary purpose at that time, and even in Ifugao, is to avoid wild animals and root and floods, and to deter thieves and for added ventilation. In Sumatra, traditional stilted houses are designed in order to avoid dangerous wild animals such as snakes and tiger. While in areas located close to big rivers of Sumatra and Borneo, the stilts help to elevated house above flood surface. It is also present in the Philippines, and in the image, I think you can see the stilt houses are built both in water and land, and the people of Sama Bajau in southern Philippines even resided in stilt houses. The second criterion of considering whether that region is a cultural region is the traditions of land use and farming. And we all know, despite globalization and westernization and industrialization, we still have an agriculturally based, most of the countries in ASEAN have actually agriculturally based economy, and we are more relying to paddy agriculture, the paddies. In our history, the development of a permanent growing system, even with stable bureaucracies and reliable tax base, happened in areas where there was a settled population, like the large rice-growing plains of the mainland and Java. So this is actually one of our commonalities. And right now, if you go outside of the UP Open University, you'll see still rice paddies, the Iri. No? So somehow, I think we cannot separate ourselves with the rice production, and it has implication. It molds the kind of culture that we are living, no? Especially that it molds or influences even in terms of our diet and even in terms of the way of life and rituals and celebration. So we cannot separate that unless we shift our production to maybe sorghum or wheat for that matter. But right now we are rice lovers, and it has also implication to our health because of high in sugar. So these are the example. It's not just only Ifugao, but I think from Indonesia and some parts of Vietnam. Traditions of nutrition, everyday practices and attitude is one. So we have the diet, the rice, fish and paste, no? Shrimp paste, no? Or fish paste. Like say in Indonesia, the terasi, no? Tayo dito is meron tayong bagoong and ginamos, diba? In southern Philippines, no? So it's practical. Even Singaporeans would love to sambal, but I think sambal is a mix of chili, no? But it's more on terasi and other shrimp paste and fish paste based food. And then I think I included here the mapping of rice production. Now, if you notice, then the green colored areas are more or less, no, concentrated rice production, not necessarily the entire Southeast Asia. And that's the reason why we're actually importing our rice from mainland Southeast Asia, although Iri is here in the Philippines. And then, of course, has implication in terms of dressing, even in terms of our communication. So the languages, the terminologies that we use, connected to the kind of diet, the kind of practices that we are, and the geography of Southeast Asia. Even in terms of schooling, so it has implication whether it is a madrasa, no? If it is Islamic base, or it could be under a Catholic or Protestant education. And seeking livelihoods, of course, changes because of the specialization of labor, no? Division of labor and the specialization of labor. We cannot do away with rituals. In everything that we are actually doing, we have different rituals. Even passing, just simple passing in the bush, we are always doing some rituals, di ba? Tabi-tabi po. Di ba? Part yun ng system natin. And of course, other recreational activities that I'm going to discuss may be part of the festivities. In terms of traditions of celebrating holidays and festivities, there are so many festivities or celebrations now related to culture, related to religion, and related to our way of life. No? This is actually, if you're familiar with this, what is the commonality? Any common feature of the four images? The headdress. So we have Singkil, and then from Thailand, the center, and then I think it is from Vietnam, or this is Indonesia, that one is Malaysia, and that's Singkil in the Philippines. Of course, they are performing arts, diba? But the commonality culturally based, they are all forms of Ramayana. We all thought that Singkil is actually Islamic. But I think we should correct that already. Maybe it's influence through time, no? The blending of variety or diversity. No? The Ramayana that was introduced in Southeast Asia by originally from India were indigenized, localized in some form by local people. So you have this Princess Gandingan, no, in Singkil, for instance, and the Darangin, no, the concept of Darangin. Of course, we have this, puppet, no, the wayang in Indonesia, and of course, the wayang yang, no, different performances. So it is good to pay attention to the prominent commonality in the region, the presence of the Ramayana, because the Ramayana is the celebration, of course, of Indian origin that has been indigenized by local people, which member country of ASEAN through the year. So practically all countries in Southeast Asia practice or observe and indigenize this kind of cultural dimension. And there are so many. In fact, we can also include wood carving, no, the arts. We have so many similarities, no, commonalities in Southeast Asia. Even the use of rice hulks, no, rice and even bamboo, no? And coconut. So similarities on that. But here in the celebration, it is just only one of the examples. We have the Thai Pusam, which are also practiced, no? Which is active practice in Malaysia, in Singapore, in Indonesia, and in some parts of Thailand. How about language? So this is actually the map of Asia. Language families of Asia, but if you focus in terms of its category, no, in Southeast Asia, you'll see about two or three distinctions. One is the Austronesian, right? The brown colored Austronesian, and then we have what's the other one? Thai Kadai, the blue, the darker, the lighter blue. And Tibeto Burman, the pink colored. Because take note that we are in Burma or Myanmar at the time, no? And then, of course, the parts of Thailand. But generally, the bigger chunk of the speakers, no, of this language actually is the Austronesian speakers. So this is a distinctive feature of Southeast Asia in its cultural diversity. Of the 6,000 languages spoken in the world today, an estimated 1,000 are found in Southeast Asia. How about in the Philippines? How many languages? The safe answer is many. There are about 170 languages. So imagine that if there are 7,107 or 108, depending on the low tide or high tide, Indonesia has about 17,000 plus islands. So imagine how many people or how many languages are actually spoken in the area. So linguistically, the mainland is divided into three important families: Austroasiatic, like the Cambodian and Vietnamese; the Thai, T-A-I, like the Thai, T-H-A-I, and Lao; and the Tibeto-Burmese, including highland languages as well as the Burmese. Languages belonging to these families can also be found in northeastern India and southwestern China. Kaya may mga Mongoloid, no? Not the Mongoloid that we're talking psychologically or, di ba? But the real Mongoloid. Around 4,000 years ago, people speaking languages belonging to the Austronesian family, originating in southern China and Taiwan, or believed to be, coming from China and Taiwan, began to trickle into island Southeast Asia. In the Philippines and Malay-Indonesian archipelago, this migration displaced or absorbed the original inhabitants, who may have been related to groups in Australia and New Guinea. Almost all the languages spoken in insular Southeast Asia today belong to the Austronesian family. Kaya, that's the reason why it's darker, no? Most of the island Southeast Asia belong to Austronesian family. And let's proceed to the last, I think, criterion, and that is religion and the material manifestations of religion. Another important feature of Southeast Asia as cultural region or regions is the presence of religions, or I may use the right word, politically correct, religio-philosophical traditions. Because there are some religions that we believe cannot be categorized or should not be categorized as religion. Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, and other traditional religions like animism and spiritism should not be considered, and Confucianism, by the way. Confucianism is a philosophy. So that's the reason why it should be called as religio-philosophical tradition. It is interesting to note that the diversity of Southeast Asia of religion has mapped the area into various, it's not only one, but cultural regions. Am I correct? It's considered to be cultural regions, religio-cultural region. Take note of Islam, with a cultural region to comprise Indonesia, Malaysia, Brunei, southern parts of Thailand and Mindanao, and small settlements in mainland Southeast Asia. For Christianity, the cultural region is composed of Philippines, Timor-Leste, and pockets of believers in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. In the Philippines, there are notable architectural projects of the Spaniards that became monuments and historical landmarks in the archipelago, such as the, later on, going to show you, the Mayagaw Church as UNESCO Heritage Site. But if you try to look at in terms of the map of the religious diversity in Southeast Asia, the Philippines has only about three distinctions, whereas other countries would have about four or five, particularly Singapore and Vietnam, no, with that, so Buddhist. No. So as for the Hinduism, the only area that remains to be Hindu is the island of Bali. However, in the history of Southeast Asia, Hinduism used to be the state machinery or tool in the foundation and maintenance of great empires such as Khmer, Majapahit, and Sriwijaya. Such influence is best manifested by the presence of great temples such as Borobudur, Prambanan in Java, Angkor Wat or Angkor Wat in Cambodia, and many other temples and areas in Southeast Asia. Islam also established prominent mosques in the region. And one of the noteworthy to mention is the mosque in Brunei Darussalam. So you'll see the manifestations of religion, and in fact right now they also serve not only as religious landmarks but also tourist destinations. But I think there were blunders committed during the colonial period. Come to think of it, that the idea of cultural region has been for many decades prior to colonization, but it was not really seriously considered. Like, we can understand that, because colonialism has its own reason and has its own purpose. So the neglect of cultural region as a colonial blunder, imaginary lines are designed by convenience of the colonizers, and we'll see that later on. And then we have disrespect of the ethnic, language, and religious groupings, which is actually related to that. And this neglect causes problems in present times, including ethnic tension and representations or recognition even from the majority of the population and or governments. And because of this, there were tensions between religious organizations. To some extent, for those tensions led to the basis of separatism and, to some extent, terrorism. So this is the imaginary lines, which are actually designed by convenience of the colonizer. If you notice then, we have some issues as colonial quote-unquote legacies. We're supposed, Borneo is supposed to be part of the Philippines. But the British tried to design it and include this in the Federated States of Malaya at the time. The same thing that happens in mainland Southeast Asia. And even Thailand, though despite its claim of being an independent country, also was forced to give way, not to cede or to annex or let the annexation of some of its territory, not just to maintain its independence. So as I mentioned, we have the disrespect in the ethnic, language, and religious groupings, such as the case, for instance, in Myanmar or Burma. So there were conflicts between the Karen and the Burmese, right? Or even conflicts between people living in Patani and Malaysia, and people living, I mean, the Patani Island, Patani province of Thailand. There's also the neglect causes problems in present time, as I mentioned, because of the ethnic tension and, of course, the historical baggages or basis of separatist and terrorist activities. I don't want to mention some of these terrorist activities, but that could be an ultra-nationalist or ultra-religious, no? More than religious in a sense, the practice or interpretation of religion. So, what are the prospects? Now, how to use cultural region after knowing all those criteria, no, the commonalities and diversity of Southeast Asia? How can we use the cultural region as a concept? Being conscious of cultural regions, the ASEAN citizens will be able to contribute fully and participate lucidly in the effort of realizing the ASEAN sociocultural community. As far as I know, sociocultural community is even considered to be easy to collaborate than economic, to realize than economic. But now, this year, we're going to start the ASEAN economic integration. In the conscious effort of understanding our neighbors, the people and all stakeholders must continue the religious dialogues and enhance religious tolerance. So we have to have communication. We should have an open communication with various religio-philosophical traditions and definitely discuss and avoid possible problems later on. So, from my perspective, I'm looking forward that academic institutions from primary to tertiary levels, particularly the primary schools, should serve as catalysts, you know, in the active teaching of the core values of ASEAN culture and society, even in terms of doing it, even the international conferences, the UP, OU, the OU5 can do that, even the Asian Center and other institutions can participate in terms of disseminating and expanding, you know, the idea and understanding of a cultural region. And we need also to reach out to the primary students by using, because I believe that the younger generation should be the first to understand, should be the first to learn. It's not just only when we talk about ASEAN and Southeast Asia and the cultural region, it's not enough to study only the country or memorize the country and their capitals. We need to let them integrate, no, and understand why they are part of this identity. I think this is the weakness of our educational system for now. And it is the advocacy of the ASEAN Studies Program and the Asian Center, is that we need to bring the younger generation to let them understand that the identity and understanding, comprehension, and appreciation of the core values of ASEAN as a citizen and as a member, legitimate member of the region, should be to understand through interaction and the people-to-people diplomacy, exchanges, and even interaction or holding such conferences at the lower level should be done regularly. Aside from that, there must be, or it is actually imperative, and it is suggested that we should hold festivals. Now, it's the ASEAN actually, as criticized also mentioned last in the opening ceremony, that the ASEAN of as a regional body is a body of governments, even until now. So there is an advocacy that instead of an organization of government should be an organization of people. And therefore, the people-to-people track to diplomacy should be encouraged regularly. And therefore, music, art, and film among ASEAN citizens should be encouraged to include even indigenous peoples, because we tend to discriminate, no, the indigenous people. We keep on talking about the development of ASEAN, but we capitalize even on culture and cultural regions, but we don't consider the indigenous people as regular, legitimate member of the stakeholders of this regionalism and regionalization. Let me quote Dr. Michael Tan, our dear Chancellor of UP Diliman, when he said in 2014, culture is not just history, is not just for history and archaeology. ASEAN perspectives can be developed in other social sciences, even in terms of sports, in terms of martial arts, and many forms that constitute cultural region. And there is an important element there, which is actually the cultural framework or frameworks. So the question is, what would food and nutrition sciences be without the camaraderie of eating? And I think we love, Southeast Asians love to mingle, especially in the presence of food, right? Am I correct or am I correct? So teaching cultural diversity imparts creativity and innovative thinking. So relating Southeast Asia to South Asia and East Asia and to the world, even as we recognize the power imbalances. Now, there's a need, like say, Gamelan versus Gangnam, or learning Bahasa Indonesia versus Italian. Importance of starting early to inculcate the appreciation of ASEAN, the body language, for example, and even of words. So from our end, we should not be, even from the Philippine point of view, we should not be comfortable only in our borders. No, we need to go out and understand others. So it's not a matter of othering. No? It is the matter of understanding. So we need to recognize, even celebrate differences. Because some are quite irritated, no, when we say, we are different from others. But Dr. Tan, Chancellor Tan, mentioned that no, we should celebrate differences, because that is the beauty of diversity. And our cultural region, and Southeast Asia is actually a good example of a cultural region, because that these differences make our existence, our identity, even richer. No? Contrasts are important in the sharing of cultural experiences. Example of that will be even the Philippine problem in education of boys rather than of girls. So in conclusion, the classification of human groups into cultural region or cultural areas or region has been criticized or critiqued on the grounds that the basis for this classification, such as similar farming systems or pottery stars, are always arbitrary. And I don't disagree with this. No, I agree partly on this. Despite this limitation, the organization of human communities into cultural regions remains a common practice throughout the social sciences. Despite that it evolved, no, since 1800 until now, this particular framework or paradigm still very important in understanding various the way and life and even the various dimensions of region. Today, the definition of cultural areas or cultural regions is enjoying a resurgence of practical and theoretical interest as social scientists conduct research on processes of cultural globalization. As such, it is important to focus also on culture aside from economic and political security dimensions, particularly of ASEAN. Understanding of culture regions as guide in a more meaningful regionalism and effective regionalization. Regionalism is a project, definitely the state to state, and regionalization is actually the process which involves non-state actors also. We need to encourage the youth and the younger generation to maximize the use of culture as essential component of track to diplomacy. And we can only do that if we have the understanding of the concept of cultural regions. Now, we need to be conscious of these concepts. We need to respect the cultural region, not necessarily reverting back to the original, but by involving all stakeholders, including indigenous peoples, to be heard in the continuing discussion of regionalism, especially in the context of culture. And then we should have embraced the idea of alternative paradigm. We aim for ASEAN integration by emphasizing diversity and for reasons other than economic, with special reference on cultural regions. And I think we should do that now. It's not just only political security. It must be comprehensive regionalism. And that will include sociocultural or cultural for that matter. Thank you very much.